Is the going live thing working? I think it's working. What's going on, guys? How's things? Welcome to YouTube. You know this deal. Smash like, subscribe, the notifications. You're gonna like this episode. It's a good one. It's a two-parter. Chapter 8, chapter 9. Why, do you ask? Because we usually have to spend an hour in a chapter. Does this mean we're doing a two-hour thing with us? No. Not at all. It's just that I kind of like that one. It's that Chapter 8 and Chapter 9 are mostly taking the concepts we've already learned here, fogging, negative inquiry, negative assertions, and applying them in more of a dialogue format. I like this one. It's a reinforcement of the stuff that we've already learned, that we've already discussed. And because I've been using different examples than the ones he used in there, because I find them to be a little bit dated, kind of more of a boomer generation thing, makes sense. It was written in the 70s. It's better able for people to map it to their terrain, as well as there's a bunch of insider stuff that I'm going to have in here. A lot of stuff from an old poster from the Married Red Pill, where I got my start, called Jack Ten of Hearts. So he was a marketing type guy, and he was pretty good at wrapping some theory around a lot of the stuff. He's got like 330,000 words. That's like three novels worth of content. And so instead of asking somebody to read through War and Peace, the MRP version, it's sometimes nice to find some way of showing how this is connected with the modern situation among men here. But anyways, how's everybody doing in the chat? I hope you guys are enjoying yourself. The reading on this one's going to be fairly straightforward. So Chapter 8 is everyday commercial situations, assertively coping, where money is involved. And he talks about in previous chapters, the systemic practice of each verbal assertive skill in turn. A brief catch up on that. It's that using these assertive things, you have to be tactical with them. There's going to be situations that have more structure and less structure. Financial ones, like a boss and employee, those ones are fairly rigid and the structure is well defined. So people are much better able to act assertively in that. The idea is the truth will set you free, as opposed to authoritative one, where if it's like a cop versus you, the interaction can be completely fluid and you kind of know the rules, but he has a lot of leeway in his interactions. And acting assertively there can actively cause you some problems, which if you haven't been watching the news last 6 months, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. But like I said, sometimes you just have to swallow your pride, and tactical alpha behaviors are the way you survive long enough to be able to be more alpha bro, whatever. Then the third one is very fluid interactions. And this is the one that guys have the most troubles with, where the ground rules aren't known, insecurity kind of runs rampant, and it's a lot of post hoc justification and manipulation. And relationships are a prime example of this. So for a lot of times, what people will do when there's an insecurity about something is they will project a certain set of rules, a way that they want their interactions to make sense. You can think about that in the girls make rules for betas and they make exceptions for alphas. You can mention that in the sexual marketplace, the tradcon ideal of whatever you want. Anyways, that's the point of it. And so some of these tools here to practice being more assertive that allow you to get your feelers out so that way you can act on a more natural level are fogging, or the ability to not give such onto it in order to escalate a situation, being very nebulous, acknowledging that somebody's emotional state happened but not validating it, negative assertion and negative inquiry, which is mostly just to take what somebody said, reflect it back at them with either making an assertion about what they said or making a question about that, what's puts the onus on them to justify, or not to justify, but to look inside themselves and their worldview that they're trying to express upon you as a manipulative tactic to see that, is this person being reasonable with me and they're just mistaken? Are they insecure about something? It helps you flush out their motivations. So go back and watch those ones. 4, 5, 6, 7. All very good for it. And so the last part I'll read on this chapter is, although you may emphasize the use of one skill or another, depending on the conflict you find yourself in, the systematic assertion skills of broken record, fogging, negative inquiry, and negative assertion are general coping skills and not limited to use in only certain situations with certain people. Now, I think his examples here, he has like a door-to-door salesman in Dialogue 8, whatever. We'll get to that in a minute. But to sum it up, it's in training learners to deal with commercial situations, many of them say that they just shut the door in the salesman's face because they don't even want to bother him with his nonsense. I advise the students that assertively coping with situations like this that are not important is a safe, low-risk, real-life method of practicing to be systematically assertive in preparation for the more meaningful conflicts that people have with others. It's like running around a track to get in shape before you run a real race. There's a great, like, I talk about a marriage strategy that I suggest a lot of guys use when they're first on this path. I call it manufactured outrage. It's the idea of taking a more proactive leadership role in a girl's emotions, because girls are gonna feel something. That's just what they do. They have gripes with their mother. They have gripes with their mother-in-law. They have gripes with their coworkers. They love to come home and complain about this stuff. Anybody who's lived with a girl will tell you they love to complain about things. And you'll find, like, case in point, even just on an internet forum, a bunch of dudes talking about swapping notes, trying to be better men in the ways that are important to them. There are internet groups that have come up full of celibate men and middle-aged, sexually frustrated women that are eventually designed around these exact kind of conflicts and want to escalate it. And so it's kind of a neat, like, it's the internet. Nobody cares. None of this stuff is real. It's just people arguing and people bitching. It's just the way it works. But it's a nice little petri dish that you get to practice these skills. And if you can use them on an internet forum, you can use them elsewhere. Again, that's why most guys, when they first get to a red-pilled space, they're getting usually given a lot of grief by some of the more senior members. And that's the point. Like, if you're not able to hold frame with a bunch of random people on the internet who are, you know, sitting at their home in their mom's basements, what chances do you have that your wife, with the possible opportunity to weaponize your kids, is going to be good at it? And so, again, back to manufactured outrage. It's the idea that girls are going to feel, and you can either be reactive to it, so they come home whenever they had a bad day, and then you get fed that bad day. It's very, like, there's no structure to it. It has nothing to do, nothing you do changes whether that happens. And so it creates this weird, from a transactional analysis standpoint, a weird situation where you're constantly put on the defensive, you're constantly living in a fear or a dread of what's coming, and that inconsistency allows you to make more childlike mental models where you're more supplicative and you're more deferential or more submissive to the girl in your life, which is the exact opposite of what you want to do. Now, girls aren't doing this on purpose. That's just what they're hardwired to do. It happens to have the unintended benefit in their perspective of, if there's some guy who can put up with this, then obviously it's the kind of guy that I can be more submissive to. It's a strict power game theory type scenario. Manufactured outrage, on the other hand, is where you actively pick fights over stupid, non-inconsequential things. Raise up the buying temperature on that, get the little anger, you get that emotional bit out of her system, and then you just drop the subject, whatever, you're moving on. It's like the highs, it's like the lows. It's a very good way to do, because a girl will have so many things they can fight about in a day, and then you get this stuff out of the system in a nice manufactured way. It's safe, it's something you don't care about, so you're not ego invested in it, which means you won't defer to older models that you maybe build in your youth that aren't quite so healthy. And again, use examples here. If there's some guy at the mall that's harassing you about buying a cell phone, if there's a collections agency guy calling you on the phone, if it's one of your coworkers giving you grief on this thing, these are very non-consequential places that you can practice these assertive skills. And so while he has examples here, like I said, in this one, Anne returns a pair of defective boots to a large department store. When was the last time you guys shopped at a large department store? I don't know about you, but for me, it's been forever. The only time I ever had to walk through the bay in Canada, which is our biggest one, is when I had to go on the subway. So it's not one I'm going to use. Again, 11, Mr. and Mrs. Heath assertively cope with evasive furniture store owner. Have you guys been to the Brick? Like, Sears doesn't even exist anymore. This is my only problem with the book, is it really does need some more up-to-date stuff. So it really puts the onus on the reader to apply it on actual situations in his life. The one that's kind of nice is Dorothy coping with the public in her civil service job. Anybody who's worked in the service industry is probably used to that. So if you're not aware, these are great situations because you're in a situation where you really have no power in the situation. Sure, you can ask a customer to leave, but for the most part, managers in that want you to de-escalate, and they largely give the customer the power to engage with you as they see fit while you have to be the bigger person. So if you're in one of those positions, a sales job, great opportunity to practice assertive skills. Especially if once you Once you've seen the client is definitely not going to be a customer and they're just there to pick a fight or vent about their day, or they just want to return something and unload on the bad day they're having because their wife was too mean to them, great opportunities there to practice this stuff. Again, Arnold gets his brake fixed. Do millennials even own cars? Like, seriously. Jack gets a refund of $1,800 from a used car dealer. Read through them. They'll help kind of like articulate it in a narrative format, but it's one of the reasons that from a red pill perspective, the onus is on you. We're like, try this stuff out, apply it in your own life. Don't take my word for it. Don't take his word for it. Even though he's a doctor and even though I've got letters after my name because of my military career, don't trust an authority. Literally try this stuff out in ways to find out if they apply to you or not, because maybe you're one of those lucky guys that never has to deal with non-assertive, passive-aggressive people in your life, and I don't know where you live. Let me know so I can move in. But, yeah. If it doesn't work, if it's not replicatable, then it's functionally useless and you have no problems with it, or you have no need to use it. Well, put that aside right now. Chapter 9 is coming next, but here's where I'm going to talk about some Jack 10 of Heart stuff, which is a great example. One of our Married Red Pill posts. Now, this was before we had the Ask Married Red Pill. We actually had the whole group together. That was guys giving good field reports. That was guys giving theory. And that was guys walking in, not knowing anything, asking a question. So in this one here, it's this guy fitting the bill for his wife's birthday. And this will be an example you can use for fogging and negative inquiry. This guy's a little baffled. His wife's birthday is on Saturday. And she said she'd like to go to a club to get bottle service. We're going to invite all of her friends. I told her we'll get at least two bottles, and all she has to do is pay for the first one, and then I'll take care of everything after that, whatever that may be. The reason I'm having her pay first is because I have a budget for the event, and having her pay for a bottle will keep our finances intact without having to dip into other accounts, which I don't want to do. See that? He's already deering. He's already justifying it to himself, and he's not understanding the situation. So he finds a pub that's perfect, great prices, makes the deposit, tells her about everything. She gets mad at him. Talks about his life story, dumps everything on it. Wife says she shouldn't have to pay for anything on her birthday after I just ask her to pay for one bottle out of the 3 to 4 I'm going to argue. And then he starts justifying the cost of it, and he's kind of missing the point. And this is where we're going to get to the assertiveness training part. So he's very unassertive. Actually, you know what I should do? I'll put a link to it in the chat. You guys are free to take a read on it yourself. But Jack, here, as he talks to the guys, like, I'm sure you're aware by the time you read this comment, we're all a boring bunch of introverts who hate Belvedere, Red Bull, and Calvin Harris. I assume you found the idea of popping bottles in ice like a blizzard and getting slizzard with your wife and her friends appealing. So imagine you showed up to a Super Bowl party, and then the host asked you for $11 because that's everybody's share for the pizza. Imagine your boss took you to dinner on his dime, but then said, you just pick me up and pay for the valet and I'll handle the rest. The point is, presentation matters. If you're a half-autistic social retard like the rest of us on here, then you don't understand this. And I guarantee half the guys were at a friend's house at some point and saw them watching a TV cooking show like Iron Chef saying they didn't get it. Watching people cook food on TV, WTF. And 90% of the comments are just about presentation. In this case, the guy doesn't understand. The girl is not about the finances for her. The girl wants to be treated special, and that her friends were being there is very important. She wanted to flex on her friends. And so the idea is that somebody she loves on a special day to treat her specially. The guy handled it in a completely non-assertive way. So he has financial concerns over the family, which is real. So you got these two situations. You got somebody who wants to have that like flex in front of her friends. We're doing bottle service. We're living the Thai life. And she wants him to treat her like a queen. It's a flex. The guy doesn't want to do that for this reason, but he's handling it in a non-assertive way. He makes this passive-aggressive comment saying, well, you get the first bottle and I'll handle the rest because I know you're more worried about money than me. And he puts the onus on her to make the assertive call, which is a completely unattractive thing. And that's why he ends up in the boat where he wants to come here and ask these guys about what we should do. In this case, a more assertive approach, and he's kind of dealing more with the presentation part of it, but a more assertive approach to this is if a girl wants to take you out for this bottle service stuff and you can't afford it. Let's say she's been a really good wife this whole time. Not want for nothing. You want to treat her well. Well, there's money in the budget for everything. You just have to make certain sacrifices. So in this case, your assertive thing is make certain sacrifices here, there, or everywhere. Make things happen. If she's not acting like a good wife, well, why are you rewarding good behavior? At this point, you could start a fight. It's not good behavior. No, we're not going to do that. You spent us out of house and home. You just spent $20 on our credit card. We can't afford it. So I'm not doing it. Or I can't afford it. I'm not doing it. She'll give you a bunch of attitude about it. Again, broken record. Look, you spent us out of house and home. I'm not doing it. Now, to be fair on this one, you're technically blaming the girl. So I would probably word it a bit differently here, because as soon as you make it blame, you're getting that ego defense from the other person. That's why you kind of may have to not sugarcoat it, but frame it properly. And this is just a way to de-escalate conflict. Again, we can't afford it. The credit card's too high. Use that passive tone with it, which allows you to broken record without attaching it to a girl's ego, which is just going to create a giant fight. Or let's say in this case, you can afford it, but that means you have to go without. Maybe you guys had a vacation planned at the end of the month. That money is going to go towards the bottle service, making it look good for a birthday. That's fine. All right, fine. Instead of going to the Bahamas this year, at the end of the month, we're going to do the birthday thing and let's do it right. And that's, again, that's assertion. You're making a call. She gives you some attitude about it. Well, I feel like we shouldn't do this and I feel like we shouldn't do that. Like, dude, I feel you. I understand. I would love to go to Bermuda, but this is important to you, so let's do it. You see that? That's like a fogging thing. You acknowledge that she feels bad. She's not getting this other thing she wanted and you've made a call. Or maybe you make the call that, hey, I'd love to take you with your friends to get bottle service. I totally see how you feel with that. Cindy's birthday last month was awesome and I want to flex on her too. But at the same time, I would rather flex in the Bahamas. What are you talking about? This, that, and the other. I can see how you'd be mad. Dude, I would be pissed too. I want to show that bitch up more than anybody. But you know what? We're going to the Bahamas. You see that? That's like a fogging thing. You get grief on that. You can add negative inquiries. Once you start saying, well, that's just because you're a bad husband. Why can't you earn as much as him? That's where you do negative assertions. That's where you can do negative inquiries. Well, why would you think I'm a better husband than him, or why I'm a worse husband than him? And then you put the onus on her for the where her moral standing coming from. And then you can find out maybe it's just she's not mad at her. And then you can acknowledge the feelings. The whole thing de-escalates. And you're not put into a situation where she has to use her manipulative tools to get you to put yourself in debt so she can flex on her friends like a party, which you don't want to do. It's a neat little situation, and you can kind of find a lot of these ones in your own life, especially if you've been non-assertive for a length of time, that'll come up on your own. Another good one that's here that I absolutely love, again, I'll put the link in the comments as well. If you guys haven't seen it, do it in live chat if I forget to put it into the description. And this is a guy who says, my wife admits she uses sex to try and control me after months of issues, but I think it's a good sign. And long story. He tells you this whole life story. This is essentially a victim puke. Talks about the things he did do. He doesn't know if it's good or bad. Jack comes in with a great comment. So, dude, can you not read between the lines here? And this is one of those, I want a guy to have more emotions. And this is going to be good because it's going to tie into that where girls want guys to be more expressive with their feelings. Or as Franco talks about in Practical Female Psychology, the betaization of men, the communication stage, phase two of the betaization. So the quotes that are important are, she wanted me to show more emotion about the events that were happening in our lives, and she's angry because he just does what he wants without asking. She'll ask if she can go out, even though she knows the answer is yes. So if the answer is you here, and this is where the assertiveness and the fogging is going to come in handy, is that she feels that you can do whatever you want, unencumbered by anxiety and whatever the hell she's hamstering about. So she feels she's dealing with her worries, fears, and concerns on an emotional island. She's going through some bad stuff in her head, and she feels like you just can't empathize. So she thinks maybe if she can convince you to open up, she'll feel better. Probably thinking you've been repressing your emotions, so it'll be good for you too. That's the point. Everything a girl says comes through her ego. So she feels anxiety, and she feels fear about certain things happening in her life. So naturally, you must be doing the same thing. And if you don't act like it, well, then you must be repressing them. Do you see what I mean there? So a girl thinks that guys need to have more emotions. They don't care about the guy's emotions. Everything stems from their ego. I have anxiety. And if you don't look like you're acting anxiety, you must be repressing it, because that's the only excuse. Otherwise, it means that not everything reflects my worldview. So she comes at with manipulation. In this case, she's weaponizing sex against the guy in order to get him to do this more. Comes out in chore play. It comes out in not tonight, I have a headache, I just wish you'd talk to me more about your feelings, all that kind of stuff. Again, getting through a negative inquiry is how you'd establish this kind of stuff. You do a fogging thing. I could see why you're anxious about this and you think I do whatever I want. And then you kind of, you know, why would you think I don't have any anxiety? But that's just it. It's a negative inquiry and it puts the onus on her to justify the moral framework that she's using. Now, since in human interactions, there's no set rules. There's no relationship rule on how these things are handled. So it's very nebulous. And so you kind of have to create the framework as you go. Again, you're using these tools. She'll end up talking her mouth off. And I guarantee you, once you guys learn how to fog negative inquiry and negative assertions better, even broken record when you've set your law down, you're going to find these people open up and they're going to start telling you your feelings and you're going to get to the core issue. So that the next time you have this insecure fight here, instead of having what is an anxiety-ridden fight on your end that turns into a dead bedroom, you find out it's just a girl has anxiety about something and all she needs is a comfort test and reassurance. Like, a lot of guys don't think about that, but there's, I would argue, a decent subset of anxiety-ridden dead bedrooms that really are just a lack of comfort in a relationship. And this is one of those cases where adding alpha to the situation doesn't do you any favors. All it does is create more anxiety and eventually dissolve the relationship. Because that's the thing. You need beta behaviors to form a relationship. Alpha behaviors are great for one-night stands. They're great for plates. They're great if you've been in a dead bedroom because the girl can't stand you, need to step up your game. But at a certain point, they can be kind of detrimental. And so to carry on with this one, his problem was he heard this. She feels anxious and he thinks he can do everything and she just wants him to express more. So what does he do? He starts letting you know, by the way, I got anxiety about a ton of stuff. I just don't tell you about it. And it ended up doing more harm than good. So this is the alternative plan you do when you don't have these skills. She says, be more emotive. So he emotes, and then she's freaked out because not only does she have her ball of anxiety, he ends up with his ball of anxiety that he just dumped onto her. And this is here. So like, look, I bet what happened is you spewed a bunch of stuff you were anxious about, which was different than the stuff she was anxious about. And then she started getting anxious about your stuff too. She also resented you for being angry about being anxious about different stuff because it actually made her feel worse. And it made her feel like more of an island, like she's completely alone on her stuff. So maybe you spewed some stuff, maybe somehow you changed it, and all this stuff he rants about, but everybody in my family's getting divorced but me, and this is all you can think about. She essentially pulled the guy into her frame, and this is why these skills are so important. Had he used proper fogging and negative inquiry and negative assertion, he could have got to the core to it, understood it as a simple comfort test, and then just passed the comfort test. At that point, sex life's back on track, everybody's good, the anxiety's gone, you're a good husband, you led your girl, you're acting like the yoke. Alternatively, in this case, he doesn't use any of those tools, he doesn't know what a comfort test is, he ends up in a dead bedroom with an anxious wife just because of this. And this is why dead bedrooms, that other subreddit, is such a horrible place. Because guys will end up in situations like this, and then they lurch out, like, what is this? And they blame it on libidos. Low libido and high libido. And it's not a low libido, high libido thing. It's that a guy has zero psychological knowledge to have his own frame, to pull a girl into his frame, and deal with any sort of conflict within his relationship. So these skills matter. And it's funny because it looks like it's just, you know, repeating yourself, or it's just acknowledging somebody's feelings. What possible difference could that have? My situation is different. Yeah. Your situation is what happens when you let a small situation of non-assertiveness escalate over time into what could be considered the worst situation in a complete relationship. And that's why this stuff is important. Now, he makes a good reference here for somebody who's autistic so they can understand it. And he uses a great example of guys that are at a company and the company's going through layoffs and how this stuff plays out in a more relatable way to men. I would honestly like using this example in this book if we had to update it, but we'll see. So the guy's concern is, I let her pull me into her frame, let her convince me that it was fine to show feelings, but in the end, both understood it was somehow wrong. So there's a way to handle this. Just realize the vast majority of the time when a wife is asking her husband to open up, it's a comfort test for her. She feels emotionally alone, wants assurances that you're feeling the same way about whatever it is. And his example is, say you have a sales job that pays salary plus commission. The corporate execs announce sales commissions will be cut by 20%, and your boss actually has no commission, but he says this: "Wow, they're really screwing you guys over. I can't believe they don't realize this. Half of you guys are going to be out the door in a week, and the other half are going to be freaking out trying to figure out how to buy Christmas gifts for the family. This is annoying. I'm going to go do something about this." So that boss, despite this newly reduced commission about having zero impact on him, just echoed exactly what everybody else felt. They feel screwed over. They're anxious on the impact of their families. They're entertaining thoughts of getting a new job. But the boss recognized that. And, you know, maybe you'll ride things out. Maybe you'll see if the boss can do something about it. He probably can't. But since your boss did that, you also know that if you interview somebody else and ask for references, you can give them your current boss, which is a superior reference to your last employer from 4 years ago. So it's not just an emotional blanket. It can actually make you more likely to succeed at whatever actions you take in the future. And that's leadership. There's a reason, too. A lot of guys are able to do this at work. Be that perfect boss like that. Reflect the person's emotional insecurities back at them. Pass a comfort test through fogging, negative inquiry. Well, why would you want to leave on this one? Yeah, and they understand all this stuff. But here's the thing. Map that to your relationship. Because most guys are like, I have to pretend to be the alpha at work all day. I just want to come home and supplicate and suck on my wife's tittle. And then they end up in these situations. So yeah, it's congruence. You have to do it. And he uses an example of how you screw this up. So in this one, say your boss is an oblivious idiot and pretty much says, I know this is a cut. I wish it was better news. Well, that was pretty emotionless. The guy's a dick. And the executives don't know what's going on. Time to work on your resume. People basically check out. Well, if he doesn't care, why should I care? Even though he said all the right things. So you'd be like, boss, do you not understand our position? You're basically asking him, can you put yourself in my shoes? And that's putting you in the position of that anxious wife who was begging you to pass a comfort test. And fogging and negative inquiry and negative assertion are a way to find out that it's even a comfort test. So you can start passing it more naturally and you no longer need these tools. And then he uses a third scenario, which is the one that the op used. So say your boss does express his own feelings about this and says, this is bad. What if the guys quit for better jobs? Then I'm going to have a smaller sales team. Plus, my team will be smaller than that other manager. They may promote him instead of me. I'm really worried about this. This is the problem with opening up your feelings. You essentially did what that boss did. So not only do the employees have a situation in this where they're worried about their sales future, do they have to find another job, can they get Christmas presents, but then the boss just dumped his whole set of insecurities onto them. If you're really in charge of the relationship, and it's not an equal relationship, being the oak is kind of your responsibility, that's the value you bring, in the same way that she brings blowies to yours. But that's the point. You not only does you sharing your emotions with the girl sabotage relationships, but it actively goes against that just get it narrative that Rollo talks about. You're supposed to know that she's anxious about stuff. She just wants to have it reflected on her. That's what she's asking, in the same way that you're like, hey, put it in your mouth. That's the female version of that. And so that's why these everyday situations, and here's an example that's both a relationship and a commercial piece of advice. So like I said, they're great reads. Come on, give them a chance, whatever you say. We're going to get to his last part here, where leadership requires work, and from this work comes authority. But at first, we're going to switch over to the Chapter 9, Everyday Authority Situations, Assertively Coping with Supervision or Expertise. If you haven't done it already, don't forget, smash subscribe, hit the like button. If you like what you see here, leave some comments, let me know. You know the spiel. You know how to show support for the channel. Like I said, you keep watching, I'll keep pumping these out. So for Chapter 9, learners generally express greater self-doubts in coping with situations that have fewer a priori rules about how things are done. Relationships that have less structure than the formal commercial transactions talked about in the previous chapter. So in commercial situations, all the rules are spelled out, sometimes in the form of a legal contract or even by procedures of common law. And most learners rely heavily on this structure for guidance on what they can or cannot do. And that's why guys who can be alpha at work and then come home and supplicate have that problem, because they are so hooked on the structure, they need that crutch in order to assert themselves. They feel more at ease in asserting themselves when there's a lot of accepted ways of doing things than when other people respond to also. When there are fewer rules, less agreed upon structures that spell how they should be done, the novice learner has more anxiety about asserting themselves. And that's why you'll find a lot of non-assertive, Like, gamma male types, they love telling everybody what they have to do around them. That's like the tradcon fantasy. A real man does this. A real man does that. My son asked the girlfriend's dad for permission to take her out to a movie. Like, all these structures, all these rules are just there to cover the insecurity of a guy being non-assertive. And this is, if we could sum up the alpha and beta dichotomy in practical psychological terms, this would be it. Alpha being the assertive thing, aloofness, being an asshole, self-interested, selfish, not afraid to go what he wants, risk tolerant. This is all about assertiveness. Assertiveness, add on top of it a little bit of muscles and a killer smile. Beta behaviors, supplicative, empathetic, making up random rules. Girls always make rules for betas and they make exceptions for alphas. Well, this is why they do it. Girls have anxiety as a state of being. And so if you're with a guy who they don't defer to, who they don't consider above them in the social hierarchy, again, I talk about my power games chart stuff from Venkatesh Rao. Take an interaction, put it on a chart, make two grids. The first grid is harmony. Is he for me or is he against me? The second one is status. Is he better than me? Is he worse than me? If you put yourself in a situation where you're not on the same page and you don't, or they don't consider you, or you don't consider yourself above them in the status, well, then you're automatically supplicating at very best. And at worst, you're not on the same page. You're either the smug guy who thinks he's better than her, but he's not, or the supplicative guy that she's against and she has nothing but intolerance for. When you put a girl in that situation where she's kind of forced into the higher status part of this interaction, they start making rules. They make rules to stave off their anxiety, and they stave off their anxiety in order to deal with you. So when you're getting these rules from girls, realize the worst thing you can do, just like that guy we talked about who said, was told to feel more from his wife, the worst thing you can do then is take a girl's leadership, because they don't know what they're doing. She didn't know how to articulate, I want you to reflect my feelings back at me so I don't feel alone. That fear of abandonment, nice guy stuff in a female body. So he took that at face value and he ended up supplicating, and then she ended up not liking it. So right there, once you kind of understand it, and I swear to God, you guys, if you haven't seen this yet, watch this again, read the stuff I'm talking about, put the connections together. You're going to see this just clicks. And then that's when you're that red pill guy, when you understand these concepts on a more natural level. This is literally the part where you're not thinking pedal with my left pedal, pedal with my right pedal, stare forward, keep your back straight. You're just pointing your bike in a direction and going. You figured it out. You understand these things. And when you can practice this, at first in a manufactured way with the tools like fogging, and eventually in more of a naturalistic way where you don't see fogging anymore. You don't see negative inquiry. You don't see negative assertion. You don't see broken record. You just see comfort test or fitness test, and you act accordingly. And it just comes naturally because you're practiced. So in this case, he's talking about to walk through the risks. And I've talked about this before too. So can he demote you? Can he give you all the lousy jobs? Is it possible the results spelled out in the job structure you're hired onto? One answer to those questions is probably no. So he uses the word authority to describe this partially structured way of interacting with somebody in the broadest meaning. One common meaning of authority is that a person who has the power to tell you what to do, or vice versa, parent and child, supervisor, employee, cop and person, those are examples. Another meaning of authority is that of expertise, as in teacher or student, and speaker audience interactions. In these cases, the rules and the structure set up beforehand is that the student learns from the teacher and the teacher grades the student in process of learning. The younger the student, the more the teacher assumes the responsibility of a supervisor, or as we say in the trade, the loco parentis in place of the parent. That one there, now this is going to be a little bit off topic for what we're talking, but this is why I jokingly referred to Jordan Peterson as Dad 2.0 for a lot of guys. If you're in a position here where you have a subject matter expertise, and I'd argue in this case, I do, Rolo does, Rich does, John to an extent as well, Troy, you end up creating an ad hoc structural authority situation where I teach, you guys learn. There's an authority inherent with that, but there's no rules involved. So I can largely make rules. So for example, if you're in my YouTube chat and you're just sitting there calling me names and making fun of this stuff, I just boot you from the channel. That's the rule. It's not a free speech channel, it's my channel. In a relationship situation, it's the same thing. You're not going to have a relationship expertise. There's no relationship degree that you can learn that other people recognize. So what you get instead is you get people to walk through consequences. Again, what is it she's going to do? A lot of the times when you get like anger and other manipulative tools used against you as a way of staving off a girl's anxiety about a situation or a way to get you to do what she wants to do, live by her Calvin Ball rules, what is she going to do? If she tries to fight you, if you're not going to do this stuff, if she punches you, can she take you in a fight? More often than not, you're the stronger one, so she's not going to fight you. She can't win. Worst case scenario, you put her in a bear hug and lie her down on the sofa. Like, what's she going to do? Sit on her. Can she fight? Can she do a push-up with you on her back? Probably not. So then, yeah, you don't have that physical violence aspect. You don't have to worry about that. Well, what's it? Is she going to divorce you? Well, she could, but, you know, none of her friends are divorced yet, so there's that risk there. Plus, it takes a huge deal, and are you really going to divorce somebody over a single fight? Probably not. So you got that. Once you walk through the consequences of not treating this person as authority and becoming more assertive in these situations, you start to realize life isn't about the parent-adult-child model. It's not just about who's the parent, who's the child, what are my feelings dictate of the consequences here. You actually look through the consequences, and then you make a more deliberate step in your life. I'm going to act this way, and I'm going to get this consequence, and I'm okay with that because I don't care. Again, assertive right. You're allowed not to care about consequences. I'll have that with my girl. We'll be talking about something and, oh, we got to do this. We got to take the dogs to park. We're going to be late or something. Like, look, I don't care. Right now, I'm doing this. And when it's done, I'll go. There's no consequences to it. She's not going to leave me because we were 10 minutes late taking the dogs to the park on an arbitrary thing. Maybe she has anxiety about traffic or something like that. And, you know, back in the day, I could have that. So, like, why are you so stressed out about this? Like, what do you think is going to happen? She'll talk about it's traffic. And then, well, it's Sunday. We have nothing to kill. But then you realize, yeah, her anxieties and her fears are based in irrationality as well. Those same PAC models that we as men were raised with that aren't helping us in our adulthood. Women are no different. Women aren't raised any better than guys are right now. They get a little bit more coddling, but that's about it. So then with these tools, you become that subject matter expert. You're able to lead because you understand, oh, okay, yeah, so she's emotional about this. It's not about the nail. It's about some other anxiety. So just reassure, don't worry. Everything will go fine. We got nothing but time. Come on. Like that trust me look about you. And that comes with practice. That comes with experience. If you've been in a horrible relationship for 10 years and you turn around and act assertive once, she's going to assume you're lying. Like you've been a, I can't do my quote, but I had an article in this. She already thinks you're an F. What did you think she was going to do? She's going to test you horribly. You're going to have to fight with these assertive tools, with the nice guy behaviors. You're going to establish yourself as the subject matter expert, like the teacher-student thing, being the oak versus being the whammon. You're building yourself up as an authority, and you're not doing it asking her for permission. She's just the springboard. She's just who you're bouncing these skills off, because she's just going to test for any failure in your armor, any insecurity that you may have, any nice guy behavior you're going to possess, any non-assertive skill you're going to have, any non-congruence in your assertive behaviors that you're doing. That's her only role here. She's letting you know if you fail. She's not there to tell you if you've won. And then you act in these ways. You start acting more assertive. Even if you don't like this girl, if you're in a map and you don't like your wife and she's been horrible for you to too long, well, this branch swing you're doing, this dread program you're running, is so that way when you're done, you've had her train you to be the absolute monster. You can pass any fitness test. You can pass any comfort test. A girl will be lucky to have you. You've been forged in fire. And then when you move on and you finally ditch her and you go to the next girl, well, there's no chance it's even going to get this far. You know this is a comfort test. You know she just doesn't want feelings. You've become the authority, not only the subject matter expert, but also the authority in the way that your structure is how she fashions her interactions with you. And that's frame. You're basically setting the ground rules for all human interaction around you. That's frame. And people are so attracted to it because they're so insecure about their lives that they're pulling them into your frame. This, to the core of it, is being attractive, a fully integrated man. And if you learn nothing else from my entire channel and all this stuff, learn that. Anyways, that's got a bit preachy there, didn't it? Anyways, I see you guys in the chat. I saw some stuff, comments here. Yeah, being emotional reflects your emotions back. Am I right? You're exactly right. You're literally being a mirror. Yeah, I can see how you feel that way. Fogging is the perfect example of how to act like that first example. So now to expand on this, we're going to do another Jack 10 thing. Where a guy's talking about his beginnings in the pill and he needs help with comfort test. This is like This is the start of when guys started to have, I've been here for 2 years. I'm fully red pilled. What's a fitness test? And so Jack talks about one of his favorite comments by this guy, Stratagos Autocrator. He's one of our older mods. He was before my time. He's been here for a while. We had a lot of good times. Very switched on. Leadership requires work, and from this work comes authority. Again, back to the basics. Ian Ironwood, praxeology of the dominant male. You take the Lindy effect. What's been working for the most throughout history? That's the male-led monogamous relationship. That's the one we've had for the largest proportion of human history, so that's the model we adopt. At the same time, you have dual-income families now. It's an economic necessity. So what do you do when you can no longer establish dominance in a relationship through financial means? If I'm not bringing home the bacon, what do I do that makes me the one running this household? Well, this is it. This is the stuff here, and it's for the low, low price of $497. But yeah, so you can easily pass comfort or fitness test if you demonstrate that you have other things to do besides, you know, whatever test the girl gives you. And he's going to use some examples here. So examples of passing these fitness tests are: identify home improvements that you've been neglecting. Stop neglecting them. Get your hands dirty. Your wife will fitness test you about some mundane task that you're not doing instead. Whatever. I'm doing what I need to do to get the house in the condition I want it to be in. She can do some mundane task. These shelves aren't going to fix themselves. And this is, so we always have disagreements. A lot of guys think of this as chore play, but proactive chore play, and that's not what we're getting at. This is an exercise in frame. So for the example, what a lot of guys say is, my wife is useless. She doesn't do anything around the house. She doesn't even sleep with me. She's a good mother because she takes them to school and brings them back, but that's it. She's useless. What do I do? It's like, all right, well, pretend she's dead and do what you need to do in your house. Fix your chores. Do basically what you would do in chore play, but you're the one dictating terms. And that's the idea. If you had to boot her out tomorrow, what would you be doing anyway? So just do that. And she's going to give you grief because she wants to make some rule for you to build her anxiety. Well, why is he doing this? Why is he fixing the house now? I nagged him for a month about that toilet. Now he's fixing the sink. What is he going to do? And that's an ego thing. He's doing something that doesn't make me comfortable. So he must be, insert the bad thing here that they don't know, that child model of it. I feel anxious about this because I don't know what his motivations are. It could be cheating. It could be jealousy. What, it could just be that nebulous thing that she feels in her bones, but she doesn't know how to articulate. So she starts throwing out tests at you. Not actually fitness tests. It's more of a congruence test. Well, why aren't you fixing the sink? A real man would do this. You're like, hey, go, like, you passed this fitness test. Fogging? Yeah, I could see why you think the sink's more important, but I got to take a dump. Or, you know, whatever you want to use in there. These tools are a way to practice this stuff, and it slowly builds frame. And this frame slowly builds dread. And then the dread will slowly pull other people into your frame, if not your wife, then at least the next girl who's younger and tighter. Getting a hold of your household finances. This one is great for conflict management, by the way. The easiest way to do this, put together a long-term financial plan, develop a budget. Now, I don't know if you're beta bucks or just beta, but if you're the former, this is a great step. It makes no sense to make all the money, but have your wife be the one who decides how it's spent. If your wife is used to dictating financial decisions, this will upset her. But this is why you put in the work for that financial plan. You have the high ground here, Anakin. Yeah, she'll cut fitness test you about not letting her go shopping sprees anymore and that you're a controlling ass. Well, you got a family to care about now, or like a house to manage. So unless her hamster is especially bestial, your discretionary spending cannot be unlimited because we're saving for retirement. Should not be a controversial response. Again, broken record on this one. Yeah, I get you on a Louis Vuitton purse, but I don't want to retire in a cardboard box on the side of the road. Just keep repeating that. Well, I think you're a jerk. You're trying to control me. Like, I can see how you'd think it'd be controlling. Fair enough. Negative inquiry. Why is it you're so hell-bent on spending us into the poorhouse? And then you find out that spending is not about spending. Maybe that spending is about an insecurity. Maybe she's a materialista that we talk about in practical female psychology. There's always a core issue that these tools can yet you get to, which ends up always, again, a fitness test or a comfort test. Do I need more alpha? Do I need more beta reflected back at me? Do I just need comfort? Do I need to get wet? And you're going to see this stuff come out once you learn to practice these assertive tools. Girls actually become more open and more honest with you. And this is why there's a great post by Archwinger. In fact, I'm going to pull it up now. Archwinger, girls' emotional best. Hopefully I can find it off the top of my head here. There it is. Overview for Archwinger. And he talks about how Alpha guys don't just get the best sex from girls either, too, which is a play on Rolo's post about saving the best. Those guys don't just get a girl's physical best. They also get her an emotional best. And this is what he means by that. By using your assertiveness, by building yourself a frame, by having other people want to come into it to stave off their insecurities, by swatting away fitness tests, by swatting away comfort tests, by not being bothered by congruence tests, by having the self-confidence not to have any insecurities based on previous mental models throughout childhood, single moms, whatever. You're actually getting a girl's emotional best too. You'll find, like most guys' fineness, at first you deal with a crap ton of fitness tests, shit tests everywhere. But then they start passing them, they get better at them, and then once they get to the later stages of their map, they find, my girl just doesn't fitness test it. She doesn't shit test me anymore. She gives comfort tests, that's it. And then that's where you kind of get that attitude of, like, how do you guys deal with all this stuff? Just deal with a good one, bro. It's like, no. Once you get to the top of the F pile, once you have enough of those alpha characteristics, people test you less. Their insecurity is staved off because they're in your frame, and your frame is a confident oak. It gives people a structure from which they can work within this, again, personal engagement that doesn't have a lot of set of rules. They're playing Calvin ball, and you're Calvin. Let me see if I can... The emotional best. I want to put this one in there too. It'll be some nice reading for people because God knows I haven't had you read enough already. There it is. Women don't just give alpha guys their best sex, they give best emotional intimacy too. Put that one in the chat. Yeah, dude, encyclopedia. Honestly, the thing I'm worried about here, guys, is I'm too many topics at once, so it's going to take like 2 or 3 listens and a bunch of reading to get caught up to me, but like I said, every little pithy comment I throw out there on Twitter, it's based on stuff like this. There's always a 10,000 word essay behind every time I make a snide comment. And it's a good one here. It's not that sinister. Women will be attracted to a particular type of guy, but that's not the guy who's quick to be emotional available, quick to commit, generous with his time and resources, and eager to provide. All these skills eventually tie into that, and it's just perfect. So back to Jack. Oh, where'd I go with it? So getting a hold of the household finances, find areas of the household the wife is especially annoying about, go pay somebody else to do that stuff. That's, again, you don't have to fix your house. You just have to solve problems. And that's your way of practicing being on the high ground, being the more assertive one in the relationship, building yourself as the authority. Now, it's mostly in your mind because you don't have to do any of this stuff. But if you're a guy who isn't used to it, these are actually good examples of how you can get there. And then his approach is like, don't worry so much about like the small stuff, which, okay, fine, that works. Now, moving forward here. Again, he has more dialogues in here, but I don't like his as much. Sam tells his employee about an increase in workload. Meh. Boss, Betty copes with a boss who meddles in her personal life. Like, I don't think these things happen anymore. People are too risk averse to talk about personal lives. Milton D. practiced to take graduate school and job interviews assertively. We can talk about that, but again, these are very, very old-fashioned examples that don't have a lot of applicability to the modern situation. Carl copes with a manipulative movie producer. You guys really going to learn from that? No. Susan demonstrates how to deal with criticism of her public speaking ability. We've already talked about criticism in a previous episode, so God knows you should have enough examples there. Ron handles the digressive, irrelevant, pertinent, and critical comments during the presentation of a report. Again, that's assertiveness on there. If you're the subject matter expert in these reports, you shouldn't need it. It's probably the most applicable out of these dialogues. Parents and teachers assertively deal with the complaints of small children. Again, if your 4-year-old calls you a poopy head, what are you going to do? Dropkick her through the wall? Or are you going to pat her on the head and tell her that's sweet and tell her to get out of here? Just put the painting on your fridge. And that's a good frame thing. Think of women as children. It allows you to respond to them as if they are children. We talked a lot about like the PAC model and how parents, adults, and childs deal with things. The children is basically a feeling-based emotional model that you've built from childhood and fears of abandonment. The parent model is how you picture an authority would be without experience yourself. Well, the adult model is one that just understands that kids are just emoting, that kids are just talking, that kids are just trying to flex on you, and you just laugh it off. That's the more healthy and sustainable way of dealing with this stuff. Again, I guess dialogue 24 is a good one. Scotty prompts his teenage daughter to be responsible for her own behavior. I don't know. It's good for a laugh. I'm not going to go over this one, but because it's a long one. It's about his daughter not coming home on time. God knows. There'd be a lot less thottery in the world if dads were able to be assertive with their own daughters, but that's something you kind of find in this. Like, you come because you hear about picking up women and have a better sex life, or maybe your wife doesn't sleep with you, but guys start to find that, like, even though your daughter is your daughter and she's family, she's still a woman. And she still responds to all the same things here that we're talking about with a wife or a girlfriend. So, while you obviously have a platonic relationship with your and God knows I hope you do. Please tell me you do. And if not, I don't want to know. Don't talk to me. Chris Hansen's channel's over there. Go check it out. But these same skills work in the same way on other people that don't have these same relationships. Just like we said at the beginning of the chapter, it'll work when you're getting pulled over by the cops. It works with your boss. It works with your girlfriend. It works with your plate. It works with your mistress. It works with daughters. It works with children. Exactly. Everything. So I'll end this one off. Oh, where did I leave off? Where did it go? The wife and the anxiety, the tests and things here. So a final field report. It was about a guy talking about his nuclear comfort test, or the main event. And it's a character. He talks about the aftermath in the biggest episode of his 2-year marriage. Essentially, we don't talk about this enough. In fact, I don't even think Rollo or Rich and them know much about it, but it's a situation called the main event. It's the idea of, if you're in a dead or dying relationship, you start acting with dread. You have your dread plan in place. You start learning to be more assertive. You start being less of a nice guy, acting more attractive, acting less unattractive. What sometimes happens is girls are stubborn. Some girls don't trust. It's just been too long. There's too much baggage on it. Their daddy issues are too much. They're super anxious. Whatever the reasons are, that they become so frustrated and they don't naturally have the tools to fall into place here in a male dominant relationship, that they essentially fight and they switch over to a more overt conversation where the tingles in them sees that this is enough alpha characteristics that attracts them heavily, but they don't have the tools to understand how to be submissive within it. And so what you get is the mother of all comfort tests. I don't know how to handle an alpha male in this relationship. How do I keep you around? How do I not lose you? I don't want to lose my best hypergamous option. And girls get a gigantic anxious event here. We call it the main event. And then the main event is the mother of all comfort tests. And once you pass it, if you want to pass it, you can always nuke it if you don't like her. You end up having a nice reset on the situation. Excuse me. So everything at that point starts at day one. Now you're the dominant one in the relationship. Life just gets easier. It's great. And I've always said a lot of guys think they have it, but they really don't. Like, if you don't have snot bubbles, it's not a main event. In this case here, she says that I told her that if she addresses me calmly and nicely, that I'll always listen. She says it's because that she tried it and it didn't work. I must have lied to her. She gets irritated, cries, laughs hysterically, calls me names, goes to the bathroom, slams the door. I catch a glimpse of blood on her hands. So I guess she slammed the door in her hand. Some ridiculous stuff there. She's having a nosebleed. Faucet's going off in the bathroom. She's crying. And the guy's like going through it, doing his best for a comfort test. He's kind of, and this was early on, so we didn't know the ins and outs of the main event yet. So he's kind of one of the cases of where, and I guess I'll put the example up there if you guys want to see more on it. It's kind of neat. Some examples of how he hands it. It's not going to be a perfect situation, but it's a good learning one. So he comes out of it with odd positives. On Saturday, I held frame since the blow up. I showed her that immature behavior is not going to have the same effect on me it used to. I use sex to show alpha traits. I have her sign of what she wanted. Ears, listening, some validation. He controlled his own emotions. Responded instead of reacting. I'm getting more and more comfortable with taking charge. Now, the negatives, he's still talking too much. So it's not perfect, but it was good enough. This is where Jack notices, like, this is the kind of stuff that's more applicable to when I say no, I feel guilty. Your wife's very emotionally needy, doesn't hesitate to make you feel bad when you don't take responsibility for her feelings. And then the easiest way to handle these situations are like fogging, negative assertions, like negative inquiry and negative assertion. Fogging would be the perfect response here. It's not my fault, but I acknowledge you feel bad. Anyways, we're running short on time here. We're getting to the hour, but it's a great field report. So if you're reading the examples from When I Say No, I Feel Guilty, and you're finding they don't resonate to you, try with the ones that I've linked in the live chat here. Again, I'll put all these in the description here when I get around to it when we're done, but it should give you a much better idea of how to handle this stuff. So that's chapter 9 and that's chapter 10, how to apply these tools in real life situations. Next chapter coming up is chapter 10, equal everyday relationships, working out compromises, or just saying no. I'm probably going to lump that with number 11 because there's really not much to it. Again, it's just more dialogues. And chapter 11 goes into, I want to word it properly here. Come on. It's amazing how big these chapters are where it's all just dialogues. It really is most of the filler. Yeah, really close relationships, sex and assertion. And that's going to be the one I think guys are going to have a lot of fun with here. And it's one of the greatest ones for examples. On that note, thank you guys for listening in, checking it out. Again, it should be noon tomorrow. I'll put it out. I made a mention too that I'm going to be offering a free signed copy of the book to one of the guys that was in the live chat last time. I lost it somewhere. I have the list of the names and I just have to pick one out of it. I got to go find where I put that list and I'll do it. So I haven't forgotten about it. We're still going to do it and I'll reach out to you. So stay tuned on this one. As always, check me out on Twitch, Instagram, Twitter. You guys can see where I'm on all there. The website, ryanstone.com. I got a ton of writing, tons of blogs. Smash like, hit subscribe. I'm going to catch you guys on the next one. I hope you enjoyed this. Can't tism be an alpha trait? Oh, you silly boy. Stop making me so angry. But let's call this one. Let's go have ourselves a coffee. Let's do a 24-hour fast. Let's do the Ed Lattimore. Let's have a cup of dark coffee. Stave off the appetite. Get another run in. Call it a day. Did I put the end cards on this? I think I put the end cards. You should be seeing them now. Anyways, guys, I'll catch you later.